plate a potential nugget.
Just moving forward, one of the things you say in the book, which really caught my attention, and I quote from the book, you say, designers distinguish between features and benefits. Negotiators distinguish between positions and interests. And policy wonks between outputs and outcomes. Talk to us about what's the nuance here.
To me, the insight here is that no matter what field you work with, if you look at the professionals, especially professionals who kind of solve problems for others, then they typically have some kind of language recognizing this. So in the policy world, you know, you go in and you say, hey, we need to build a courthouse in this region. And then everybody focuses on that because we can look at it when it's done. But what is that? That's kind of the output. What is the ultimate outcome you want? And that's probably not a courthouse. That is better justice in the region, you know, which can be a different problem to solve for compared to the simpler one of, hey, how do we build a building? So I think that's in one area. You see it almost no matter what industry you work with, you will discover that there's some recognition of the need to unpack a goal or a problem. Like, okay, you want to become an author. Why do you want to become an author? Well, there may be a component about spreading good ideas. There may be a component about wanting to get on talk shows. There may be a component about identity. I want to be somebody who is like recognized, smart, having written a book is still like the classic way of kind of signaling that and so on. So that need, and I think your why questions, that need really needs to be surfaced. Before you can do effective problem solving, lest you just start attacking the most immediate thing that may not actually deliver on what you truly want.
Really powerful. You know, I think this came through in one of my conversations with a gentleman called Stu Friedman from Wharton. And he talks about four domains of life, right? How do you think about yourself, which is your physical, mental health, spiritual health, how you think about your time at work, how you think about your family, and how you think about your community. And he says that you need to think about this four-piece jigsaw in a meaningful way as you go through life. But he goes on to say that it's one thing for you to figure out the jigsaw for yourself, but your family might not be aligned with where you want to go, right? And you want to sort of carry them along. And he says, how do you do that? There he says, you don't talk about positions. You talk about interests. You know, you don't say, I'll spend an hour with the kids. You know, you really say, if I have to be an affectionate father, what are the different mechanisms? And really solve for the primary need and not for the surface commitment, which is, you know, maybe, you know, you might have a ritual saying, you know, I'll have maybe one meal with the family in a restaurant every week. But you don't want to take it literally. You want to sort of distill it to what exactly is the need we are solving. And maybe have a conversation with your spouse and with the other people around you to sort of get into an equilibrium. So it came up in that context.
I'll share an example from my own life, which is I don't have children yet. I do have nieces and nephews, and they live in a different country. They live in Denmark, where I'm originally from, and I'm based in the US. And so it's difficult to stay connected to them. And one thing I was tempted to do is kind of go, well, I should, whenever they have a birthday or Christmas, I'll just give them a really nice present. But then I realized that that's a nice symbol. But really what I wanted to do was actually to connect with them. And so I started thinking of gifts that I could give them while we were together. So, you know, basic stuff, but like taking them out shopping. Go out and spend a couple of hours shopping with your niece, and kind of that was a gift to her and it was a gift to me, and kind of is something we start suddenly trying, like building a little bit of connection, even though that I'm away out most of the time. And that problem and a lovely present wrapped in the nice paper or whatever would not solve. So a simple example of kind of thinking about the outcomes, your interests, if you will, versus what you said, the position or the immediate kind of stated thing we're looking at.
Yeah, very true, Thomas. If I may share, that triggers another anecdote, right? I think I'm a part of a WhatsApp group, multiple WhatsApp groups, but a couple of them are my batchmates from my high school, batchmates from my engineering college, and so on. Mm. And typically, we'd observe that people are wishing happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday on the day of somebody's birthday. Then one of them turned around and said, why don't we ask the birthday boy or girl to just write an update on their life once a year? You just write an update. The idea is for us to stay connected to each other's lives and understand what's going on.
Yeah.
So why don't we just turn this sort of bland, meaningless ritual into something a little more purposeful? And then we started see people saying, you know, we sing, or we like cooking, or we like sailing, or we like hiking. And then that triggers a chain of real conversations around interests, around passions, around, you know, pain points in some cases. So you're right. I think there's an opportunity for us to question the rituals and really ask what are we solving for in that mode of interaction.
I love that example. That is such a good example of a super simple habit that has specific triggers. Namely, when it is my birthday, I write a short update on what's going on in my life. Mm. Much better than what you're suggesting there. So this makes me think of something important I realized with problem solving, that in some sense, we tend to focus on our biggest problems. Like, I have this either a strategic challenge I'm facing right now, or a very difficult key client, or maybe this career consideration I'm in the middle of. But really, problem solving is a thinking skill that if you get good at it, you can start to apply it to even very small things. And just by virtue of finding smarter solutions to small things, you start to generate a much better surplus with which to tackle some of the bigger problems as well. So to me, it's really ultimately a mindset that you go in and you relentlessly apply to anything from strategic problems to how do we stay connected with my high school batch or the university batch you're dealing with. Really, really interesting example.
In the conversation, I refer to an insight I learned from Stu Friedman of Wharton, who studied work-life integration for decades. Here's the insight from him around understanding underlying interests rather than positions. Stu, you talk about in stakeholder dialogues, you say that expectations are often stated as positions and not as interests.
Yeah.
Again, I found that quite thought-provoking. Could you expand on that a little bit?
Well, in putting this part of the program together, we borrowed heavily from modern negotiations theory. And that's where this notion comes from. So if you read the great Roger Fisher and Bill Ury, Getting to Yes, which is one of the fundamental works in that field, you'll learn about this notion of positions, not interests. The basic idea there is what you want to find out from people as you're trying to discover new ways of doing things that are good for both of you, or agreements that are going to work for both of you, win-wins, you've got to get past the position and to the underlying interest. So what do you really care about? Well, I want you to be home more. Well, okay. But what's really important to you? Well, I just need you to be around more. Okay. Why is that important to you? Well, so that I know you care about me, that I know you love me, and that you have my interests in mind, and that you're going to do everything you can to protect me and to nurture me. Oh, okay. Let's talk about the different ways that I can make that happen, even when I'm not here. So you start to talk about all kinds of creative possibilities instead of arguing over when you're home. It's not so much about when you're home. It's about where your heart is and where your mind is when you're with the people who matter most. And this goes, of course, for people at work and in the community as well. So another thing that we found is that it's not so much the amount of time that parents spend with their kids that affects their mental health, their emotional health. It's the quality of that time. You know, am I present? And for moms, especially for mothers, it was a matter of, again, not the amount of time they spent with their children, And in fact, the more time that mothers spent on their own self-care, the better off their children were in terms of their mental health. And that, of course, is because when you take care of yourself as a mother, you're much better able to take care of your kids when you need to.
Back to what Thomas says, focusing on the underlying and not really getting carried away by the surface level manifestation is good advice in general. Thank you for listening.